This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In an age of smartphones equipped with sophisticated geolocation software, paper maps might seem like relics from another era, and maybe they are. But today, some of our oldest maps are considered priceless works of art, bought and sold through a lucrative market of collectors, dealers, and librarians.
There's also a black market in rare maps, and a story of a map thief who paid dearly for his crime. In 2005, E. Forbes Smiley III was caught stealing a map from a library at Yale University. After his arrest, investigators linked him to map thefts from other libraries. And eventually, he confessed to stealing almost $3 million worth of rare maps in Boston, Connecticut, New York, Chicago, and London.
Smiley is now out of jail, living on Martha's Vineyard, where journalist Michael Blanding interviewed him and wrote a book about his career and fascinating crime spree. Blanding is a senior fellow at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University. His new book is The Map Thief, the gripping story of an esteemed rare map dealer who made millions stealing priceless maps. And Michael Blanding, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good Thanks. To have it's you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. It's a great story. Tell us first about the types of maps that E. Forbes Smiley III, and I love saying that name, by the way, admitted to stealing. What was his interest?
He was stealing antiquarian maps from about 1500 to 1800. It was really the golden age of exploration and the discovery of North America. And he was from New England himself and really specialized in maps of New England and the Mid-Atlantic region at that crucial time when it was being discovered.
So how valuable are these maps? What are the kinds of dollar signs we're talking about?
You'd be amazed. They go up to $100,000 and more. The most valuable map that he stole was worth $185,000, and there were many that were in six digits.
And how would he do it? What was his MO? What was the way he usually got hold of these
maps?
It was
surprisingly easy. You know, these maps are many of them in old books in rare map libraries, and sometimes they're not even cataloged in these books. The libraries didn't necessarily even know that the maps were there, and he could just go in and wait for an opportune moment and rip them out and put it in his blazer pocket, and he had a $30,000, $50,000 payday.
You open your book with a really interesting description of Smiley in the act of stealing what would become the last map he ever stole, or at least that's what seems clear, and the one that got him in trouble at Yale University. Can you read just the opening section of the book, because it kind of lays it out in a really interesting way. Just the first paragraph.
Sure,
there.
Be happy to. E. Forbes Smiley III couldn't stop coughing. No matter how much he tried to suppress it, the tickle in the back of his throat kept breaking out into a hacking cough, drawing glances from the patrons sitting around him. The glass fishbowl of a reading room at the Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library at Yale University was quiet, except for the low hum of the air conditioning and the clicking of fingers on keyboards, making Smiley painfully aware of the noise he was making. At one point, he pulled a handkerchief out of his pocket to muffle the sound. As he did, an X-Acto knife blade wrapped inside fell softly onto the carpeted floor. He folded the cloth and put it back in his pocket, oblivious to what had just happened.
Oblivious to the fact that he had just dropped an X-Acto knife on the floor.
Exactly,
right?
and the X-Acto knife blade that actually led to his arrest when a very attentive librarian saw it sitting there. And ironically, he wasn't even using the blade that day to cut out maps, although he had on other occasions. That day he was just ripping them out of the books, but that was enough to alert the librarians, and eventually they followed him and caught him.
Right, and eventually he admits to stealing much, much more than just one map. So how many did he steal, or how many do we know that he stole?
Well, it's an open question. As you say, he admitted to stealing 97 maps from six different institutions, and I was able to uncover 11 more that were returned to libraries after his sentencing, so that brings the total to 108. But the libraries are missing upwards of 250 maps that they accuse him of stealing. And the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, and we may never know exactly how many he stole.
It's such an interesting story because E. Forbes Smiley III, as you tell us, was actually very knowledgeable about maps, respected collector and dealer. So here's the question that you raise in your introduction. Why did a respected map dealer at the height of his profession betray those closest to him and deface the artifacts he spent his life preserving?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, I know you wrote a book answering that question, but what's the short answer to that question?
Obviously, it's a complicated answer, but yeah. You know, as near as I was able to piece it together, it's really sort of a tragic story where he was this exceptional individual. He was not only very knowledgeable, but he was also very skilled with his hands, and he had sort of a larger-than-life personality. He was very gregarious and jolly and well-liked by people, and but he always tried to sort of create this image of himself that that he couldn't quite live up to. Of being this jet-setting, rich map dealer who was sort of selling to the rich and the famous, and he was a terrible businessman, and his debt started spiraling out of control as other map dealers began out competing him, and he just couldn't live up to this image that he created, and eventually had to turn to theft in order to support himself rather than admitting that he'd failed at the task he set himself.
Now, in writing this book, you spoke to Smiley. You met him on. He's out of prison now, living on Martha's Vineyard, and you managed to do at least two interviews with him, right? Two?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, you're the only journalist who convinced him to sit down and talk. Why did he want to talk to you?
Yeah, I spoke to him through a friend that introduced me to him, and I think, you know, after all these years, it happened about 8 years ago, and he'd never really had his chance to tell his side of the story. And I think he was ready now. He's out of prison. He's actually quite remorseful and has had a lot of time to process what he did and, you know, wanted his side of the story out there. And unfortunately, at a certain point in the writing process, he changed his mind and stopped talking to me. And I'm still not exactly sure why. But at that point, I'd had a large chunk of the story as well. And I pieced the rest together through other interviews.
Yeah, he you were well underway with your book project. And he made the decision at the behest of a family advisor advised him to spare his family, right?
That's right.
But you think it had more to do with his own fears of exposing secrets that he never revealed.
Yeah, I eventually, as I started talking with other people around him, started finding holes in his story, things that he told me that I couldn't support, or evidence of other maps that he had taken that he hadn't admitted. Mm. And so it's an open question about whether he just felt like he was too close to the story and couldn't talk about it, or whether there are secrets that he felt cooperating with a book he'd be forced to tell, ultimately it's a mystery that I'll never know the answer to.
The subtitle of your book is the gripping story of an esteemed rare map dealer who made millions stealing priceless maps. Did he make millions doing this?
He did. He made the maps themselves were worth upwards of $3 million. The irony is that a large chunk of that actually went into this very grandiose project that he had where he sort of ended up buying this small town up in Maine and trying to create this image of this perfect New England town. And so he certainly spent a fair amount of it on fancy meals and plane tickets and nice clothes. But, the vast majority of his ill-gotten gains went to this sort of mercurial project up in Maine.
There's something so intriguing about this kind of crime, and I'm thinking of art theft in general, but this question always comes up, and that is, how could he ever sell these rare maps? I mean, wouldn't a potential buyer know they were stolen?
Yeah, it's actually very surprising when you're dealing with these rare maps. It's not like a rare work of art where you have a one-of-a-kind painting that's hanging in a museum and you need to break in and steal it. These maps, you know, there may have been 1,000 copies printed 400 years ago, and maybe a dozen survive. And while people know where most of them are, there's always the chance that another map could be in somebody's attic or in the collection of an old collector. And so he was able to sell these in broad daylight and say, you know, I'm selling off this whole collection, and here's this priceless map. And people would, he'd been in the business as a legitimate map dealer for 20 years before that. And so people said, sure, we believe you. And they'd pay for it and display it right out in the opening. And no one was any the wiser that it came from Yale or the Boston Public Library or Harvard or any of the other places that he stole from.
Michael, I want to ask you about the impact of Smiley's crime on the sort of world of rare maps. And so we're going to play a bit of tape. This is Clive Field. He's a director at the British Library in London, from which Smiley stole one of the earliest maps of America. And he was speaking back in 2006 to NPR at the time of Smiley's sentencing. Let's listen.
people who are really interested in these maps may in future not have the level of access that they should, simply because people like Mr. Smiley have effectively betrayed the trust on which libraries and their patrons have to operate.
So did that happen? Are libraries clamping down, locking these up, and are they no longer as accessible as they once might have been?
Yes and no. There's certainly more hoops that you have to jump through to see these maps. The very map that he's talking about, I actually went and saw at the British Library, and it's now in a special section of the library within the rare books department. You need to go and you need to look at it in a special desk and under the watchful eye of librarians. And so there's an added level of security there. But you can still open these books up. You can go in off the street. You can request a book and flip through. And, you know, that particular map was in a book once owned by the Archbishop of Canterbury. And I went and flipped the pages and looked at the maps, and it's really quite thrilling. So, you know, these libraries, their job is to provide access to these materials, and so they're sort of in this bind where, on the one hand, they don't want to prevent people from actually encountering history in this way. At the same time, they've got to protect it. So there's always a chance that someone can take advantage of that.
Well, it's a fascinating story. And Michael Blanding, thank you so much for coming in and sharing it with us. It's a great read and a great story.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Michael Blanding. He's a senior fellow at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University, and he's author of The Map Thief, the gripping story of an esteemed rare map dealer who made millions stealing priceless maps. It hits the bookstores today.